So what did we discuss in that previous class?
Demi was a like different part and parcel of the body, and they are the creatures of the God. Demigods, they born after one after another under the three material, three modes of nature. So because of that, they are separate in their action.
Any other points?
When one meditates on the feet of the Lord with eagerness and devotion, then he automatically gets detached from all the material.
And because our Lord empowered the expansions and not the Lord himself.
All the ingredients, everything is there, but they are not completely in action, so they are praying to the Lord to empower them to put them together and do their function as for each element, each demigod is responsible. They are praying to the Lord to give them the intelligence and power to put them together and function.
And deciding to that point, we have discussed there is a preaching point in India especially, that we have 3 million demigods and they are not the supreme, because they are praying for someone.
33 million.
So they are praying to someone who is the supreme Lord like Krishna, so we can say that it's said in the, because they are praying for someone because they are not supreme.
Demigods are also praying that you are the original founder of all the demigods and all the creations. And you are the supreme, and there is nobody superior to you, and you are the source of me.
Yes, sir. When the demigods are created, you mentioned the power of God, goodness, and the love, and so on, then the demigods are produced. So that their origin is described.
Article of the devoted or the Krishna is that he must be serious.
Yeah, I think I'm just listening to the very last class because I didn't come. I think he said karmis and yamis is very difficult for them to understand, and for a devotee it's very easy. And then it says that within the heart itself, the Lord, the lotus feet, or the Lord's within the heart of each person, so it's easier for a devotee to understand that back then, for the karmis or the jnanis to understand all this.
So the demigods are praying to the Lord to give them his knowledge so that they can act in a cordial way, because the modes of nature has separated them and they are acting differently, so they cannot work in harmony. So that's why the Lord is, they are praying to the Lord to give them the knowledge and the power so that they can act in harmony and they can supply the necessity to the living being and act according to the Lord's will.
Any other points?
And so we discussed about Mahatattva, that is manifested material energy, and 24 material elements. That like five Mahabhutas, five sense objects, knowledge acquiring senses, and then subtle elements and sense of action. Those 24 material elements.
Also, material nature creates this unity, that then goes the community for the pleasure of the Lord because of the movements of the modes of material nature.
So, is this dialogue between the Lord and the demigods is taking place outside the universe, or they are inside the universe at any stage?
It's not clear. For me, it's not clear what's taking place, because it was discussed that the elements were created, and then the universe hasn't been described yet, the Galvadakshaya Vishnu has entered into the universes. So it doesn't appear that the demigods have manifested yet. And we're talking about like the straight up, it's the description is given straight after the description of Mahavishnu glancing into Pradhan, mm-hmm. and then manifesting the elements, mm-hmm. and then the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is not yet manifested, mm-hmm. but it would seem that these prayers would be made by the demigods after they've entered into the individual universes, mm-hmm. and then manifested, and then they're confused about how to construct the universe. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem clear to me, mm-hmm. like what's happening. And I read as much as I could from Bhurajan Prabhu's book, and he didn't seem to answer it there. I couldn't find it. And I've read all the purport, and I've read everything that I've got available, but I can't fully work it out. So it seems to me that the demigods would be in terms of the demigods after they've entered into the universe. Because it doesn't seem like they would be present before that. But it's gone straight from the description of the glance of Mahavishnu straight to this point. And then now we see after, from Mahavishnu's glance, then the demigods praying, and then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is about to manifest in what we discussed tonight. So it seems like for some reason there's a break up there. So I don't know. That seems a little confusing like that. But I would take it that what the demigods are saying, you know, take that part and then put it forward like that. Because the Bhagavatam is like that. The Bhagavatam does discuss things differently. So sometimes it's not chronological. So yeah, in my mind I'm taking it like that. Because otherwise it's a little bit difficult. But I haven't read anything that kind of reconciles it, so.
I was reading Vishnu Puran. I mean, I was just looking for the word Pradhan, and it took me to Vishnu Puran. And under that, give a detailed thing as to the. It says that the Mahatattva comes from the Pradhan, and it says it's eternal, and gives a. I printed it. I forgot to bring the pages. Actually, it gives a pretty detailed description of the seven lokas, the upper lokas, the Patala lokas. And the Surya, Chandra, and every detail. So, somehow I felt I could understand better with those descriptions. It says what is Brahman, what is Mahatattva, what is Pradhan, how everything comes from it, what's the each dimensions of each of those lokas gives. So, maybe I should bring it next time and talk to you.
Yeah, bring it on. So, it'd be good to interest it. So, we see in the middle of chapter 5, there is a description of the creation in terms of Mahavishnu glancing into the Pradhan, the unmanifested material energy. So that unmanifested material energy is glanced at by the Lord, and only by his glance does the whole thing begin to manifest. So at this point, when the glance takes place, then the elements begin to manifest. And then this pradhan becomes called Mahatattva. So it is the 24 elements with the time factor, and then with the Lord himself entering. You could say it's Paramatma. So at that point in time, then we call it Mahatattva. Like that. So then it is described the different elements which make up the entire Mahatattva. That all these 24 things begin to manifest by the Lord's glance, then everything becomes differentiated, everything becomes individualized, and everything begins to function, and everything shows its inherent traits or its qualities. Because intelligence, mind, ego, and consciousness, these four subtle elements, you cannot really differentiate them just by looking at them, because they're so subtle that we can't even see them. But for those who could see them, like Lord Brahma or some great personality who could see them, they're very difficult to differentiate what they are, because they're so subtle. But then each one of them has a particular function or particular qualities or particular characteristics. and this begins to manifest, and then you can see, okay, this is intelligence, this is consciousness, this is mind, this is ego, because each one has a different characteristic. So then this all begins to become manifest by the Lord's glance, if you like. And then it is said that the first part of the glance is, or the first element which the Lord activates by his glance is the false ego, the ahankara. So by the false ego becoming activated, that mixes with the three modes of material nature, which also become activated. So when it mixes with the mode of goodness, what becomes manifest?
The mind
and the devas, the demigods, right? And then it mixes with the mode of passion, the intelligence, and the senses, the ten types of senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, and the senses of action, like that. And then it mixes with the mode of ignorance and the gross elements become divided like that. Or you could say the Mahabhutas like that, because the senses are already activated like that. The mind is already activated, the intelligence is already activated, the false ego is activated. So it means the gross elements become activated like that. So then everything begins to manifest and become created at that point in time by the Lord's glance like that. And then with everything being manifested and created, then we see the description was given of how from the subtle elements, then the gross elements begin to manifest. Mm-hmm. So then we saw that from sound, which is the original element, or the first element, the most subtle of the elements, then from sound, being touched by the Lord's glance mixed with false ego, begins to manifest into the element of ether, in which we perceive sound. Like sound, we can hear sound. And then the element of ether is what allows us to perceive sound. Because ether is something which is very subtle, but sound bounces off ether. And it's like Prabhupada calls it sky or space. It's an element which we can't actually see or touch even, but we can hear it. So therefore it exists and sound bounces off it. And then from sound manifests the manifests ether. And then from ether manifests the gross sense to perceive ether, which is ear. The faculty of hearing. Like that. The hearing sense, which is the ear. And then touch, like that, begins to manifest. And then from touch, then air begins to manifest. And from air, then the sense of touch, or the skin, begins to manifest. So in this way, the whole, all the elements begin to manifest from the Lord. Right? It's clear? Anyone have any questions on anything?
One thing, when the false ego combines with passion, then the intelligence and the elements.
Senses.
Intelligence and senses. And the ignorance.
Ignorance means the elements.
What senses?
Earth, water, fire, air. Senses are already activated by. False ego mixed with passion.
So then it mixes with ignorance and the senses?
No, with ignorance comes the elements. Earth, water, fire, air. Like that. Okay.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to ask you this, but in relationship, I can't understand where the causal ocean is when an Amitesh lies down and Mahavishnu lies down and begins creating. Now, is the causal ocean originally part of the ground in the corner of Vaikuntha, or where? And how is the causal ocean created?
The causal ocean is where Mahavishnu is lying down.
Yeah.
Mahavishnu is lying down upon the causal ocean, and he's within the Mahatattva.
Mahatattva.
Okay. Okay. In the, you can see like the sum total, the total, like it's described that within the spiritual sky there is a cloud. Somewhere within the spiritual sky, a dark cloud.
Yes.
And that dark cloud is the Mahatattva. And that's where Mahavishnu is lying down on the causal ocean. And then it is said he glances at Pradhan, which is within that. That's like the material energy unmanifest.
Yeah.
And then by that glance, then everything becomes
yeah.
created.
Yeah.
So the causal ocean and Mahavishnu, they're eternally existing there.
Thank you.
That's
clear now. Yeah, I want that. Yeah. So what happens after annihilation?
Annihilation means the Mahatattva, which means all these elements, everything which just described,
yeah,
it all goes back into the body of Mahavishnu. All the universes go back into the body of Mahavishnu. That's called annihilation.
And the Mahavishnu is still alive in the ocean.
He is alive.
Always.
Yeah, it's described like that. He's eternally in that position.
But I thought that this is just like it, when Lord wants to create this world, then he glances and in part of this future sky, and there's a sort of cloud forms. But it's not there always.
Yeah, it's described that that cloud is always there.
Okay.
And Mahavishnu is always there.
Mm-hmm.
And when Mahavishnu breathes out, all the universes come out of his pores.
Mm-hmm.
And when he breathes in, all the universes go back within his pores. So practically he's just laying there and he's just breathing in yoga nidra, which means he's in a mystic slumber, he's in like a sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And all these universes coming in now just while he's breathing.
So Mahavishnu and the causal ocean is permanent.
Like that.
What about Adhikarbhutikasai Vishnu and the Siddhikasai?
They're not permanent because they only manifest when the universe is manifesting.
Okay. So where do they go?
Back into Mahavishnu. They are Mahavishnu. They're expansions of Mahavishnu.
Oh, just a comment, you know, considering very specific detailed subject matter within the chapter itself, the title is very, very general. Vidura's talks with Maitreya.
Yeah, because it's just the beginning of their talks.
Mm-hmm.
They've only just began to discuss, but this discussion goes for two cantos. So yeah, it's just like that. I mean, it could have been called something more, but you'll see, like in chapter 6, then it becomes specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the creation of the universe. The next chapter is called.
Yeah. And it's not that the entire chapter is just based on that. The first part of the chapter is glorifying hearing. So then, at the end of the chapter, the demigods become confused because all these elements are created, yet they don't understand how to put them together. Or they don't understand, they don't have the required intelligence and ability to perform the task, their service of putting all these things together in a coordinated way. So they pray to the Lord. And then we see the end of the chapter is the prayers of the demigods to the Lord for the intelligence and the ability. And this is the same in any service we do. We understand that the service is only being performed because Krishna is giving us the intelligence and the ability to do the service. And even you can do the service, and you may be quite expert or adept at doing the service. Just like you can go and cook an offering for the deities. So you may already be a very good cook. You may be very experienced. You can virtually do it with your hands tied behind your back. Virtually you can do it with your eyes closed. You've cooked so many offerings for the deities. Like, you know, Yadu Shrestha Prabhu. Everyone knows you. He was here a long time. He told me when he was here last time, I can't remember the figure, but he said he worked out how many offerings he cooked for Radha Balva. It was something like 40,000 or something. Or, you know, over 15 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
He cooked so many offerings for the deities. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't 5, I can't remember, but it was thousands. Maybe 10,000 or it might have been 40, I can't remember. So he'd done the offering so many times, he virtually closed his eyes and just did the offering. But the point is that it doesn't matter what the activity is that we're doing for Krishna. The point is that even if we've done the activity many times and we're expert at it, we always have to pray to Krishna and be humble and remember and be in the consciousness that it is Krishna who is giving us the ability and the intelligence to perform the activity, regardless of even if we are expert at doing the activity, even if it's a simple activity.
Mm.
Like that. So the demigods are praying to the Lord, please give us the intelligence, please give us the ability or the potency to perform this activity. Automatically you pray like that when you have to do a difficult service. When you do a difficult service, you pray like that. But we should learn that while we're doing our service, not to become proud and think that because we're expert at doing the service, and it's a more simple service, or we're very expert at doing it, We should not become proud and think it is our ability that allows us to do that service. You know, because if you don't pray, then you lose your potency in doing the service, even if it's an easy service. Like that. So that consciousness has to be. So tonight we'll go through verses 1 to 10 of chapter 6. And we will see in these first 10 verses, we will see the universe begin to manifest, and the Virat Rupa, or the universal form, begin to appear. And we'll see what the Virat Rupa's purpose and function is. And we will see Mahavishnu expand himself into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Like that. So tonight we'll go through what's spoken in verses 1 to 10. In the next few weeks I'll go into much more detail on this, because there's a lot more detail involved. But tonight we'll just go through a little bit more simply what's involved here. And then in the next few weeks I'll give you much more detail on the creation, how Mahavishnu does, how he expands his Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and so many of the elements which are involved in that. It's quite intricate. Even what's mentioned here is there's more detail to be had, but we will not give it all immediately because it may be a little overwhelming for the devotees. So beginning chapter 6. The Rishi Maitreya said, "The Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahat Tattva."
There is nothing wanting in the creation of the Lord. All the potencies are there in the dormant states. But unless they are combined by the will of the Lord, nothing can progress. The suspended progressive work of creation can only be revived by the devotion of the Lord.
Thank you. Okay, any points here?
Without his will, nothing can happen.
Yeah.
And there's nothing lacking in his creation.
Hmm.
Nothing.
Everything is there. So everything has been given by the Lord. Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur says there is nothing lacking in the material world except Krishna consciousness. So in the beginning of the creation, the Lord gave everything necessary for the jivas. He gave all the different elements. He gave them everything necessary to exist within the material world. But the demigods did not understand how to combine it all. And therefore there was a halt in the progress of the completion of the creation of the universe. So therefore, after hearing those prayers, the Lord desired that the universe become manifest. And therefore, he gave the potency to the demigods, the intelligence and the potency. Okay. So we'll see, it's very interesting how he allows them to understand how to create the universe. This will be described in the beginning of this chapter. Because they don't know how to create. They need a blueprint, basically. You know, they need, like, it's like if you're building a house or something, you need the architect's blueprint. Like that, in order to understand how everything should be constructed, like that. So it's interesting what this blueprint is. Does anyone know what the blueprint is?
Virat Purush.
Yeah, the Virat Rupa. He is the blueprint. And we'll see that in this section. It'll become manifest like that.
In Nisa Parishad once it is said that the Lord created so many universes and it's all complete in itself. That
everything is
there.
Purna.
Yeah,
Purna.
Heaven.
Purna.
Required for the
maintenance. The Supreme Powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy. who alone amalgamates all the different elements.
The ingredients of matter are counted as 23. The total material energy falls into sound, touch, form, taste, smell, earth, water, fire, air, sky, eye, ear, nose, tongue, skin, hand, legs, evacuating organs, genitals, speech and mind. All are combined together by the influence of the time and are again dissolved in the course of time. Time, therefore, is the energy of the Lord and acts in our own way by the direction of the Lord. This energy is called Kali, and it is in Kali or Kali?
Kali.
Isn't it called Kali? And it is printed by the dark, destructive goddess, generally worshipped by persons influenced by the mode of darkness or ignorance in material existence. In the Vedic hymn, this process is described as Mool Prakriti. Aviktir Mahapadhyay Prakriti Vikrityay Sapt Sadaksha Tu Vikaro Na Prakriti Na Vikrti Purusha. The energy which acts as material nature in a combination of 23 ingredients is not the final source of creation. The Lord enters into the elements and applies His energy, called Kali. In all other Vedic scriptures, the same principle is accepted. In Brahma Samhita it is stated, Eko api aso shvetam jagadanda koti yas shaktir asti jagadand chayanta ananta andantastham parmanu chayantastham govindam adipurusham tamam. I worship the Primal Lord Govinda, who is the original personality of Godhead. By His partial planetary expansion, that is Mahavishnu, He enters into the material nature and then into each and every universe as Garudkari Vishnu and then as Shirodakshaya Vishnu, into all the elements, including every atom of the matter. Such manifestations of cosmic creation are innumerable, both in the universal and in the individual atoms. Similarly, this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Athva bahunetin kam yatin avarjana vishtabhyam idam krishnam ekanshen sthitojaya. O Arjuna, there is no necessity of your knowing about my innumerable energies, which act in various ways. I enter into the material creation by my partial primary expansion, that is Paramatma or Super Soul, in all the universes and in all the elements thereof, and thus the work of creation goes on. The wonderful activities of material nature are due to the Lord Krishna, and thus He is the final cause or the ultimate cause of all. Ishvara Parma Krishna Sathyanandi.
Any points here?
God has innumerable number of energies. God has got innumerable number of energies. And time is one of that energy. And that energy is also called Kali. And it acts under the direction of the Lord. So it is worshipped normally under the mode of ignorance. The people who are under the mode of ignorance.
In Bengal. Very popular. Not to say they're in the mode of ignorance, but it's very popular. But actually they are in the mode of ignorance because they worship Kalis.
Prabhu, in Bhagavad Gita it says, in the chapter of the universal form, it says that Viragupa says time I am. And now here it says that God is Kali is the time, so it's a little bit...
not clear. Kali means Durga. Durga. So this, we'll discuss this also in the next in the creation. Mahavishnu glances at the material energy, the pradhan. I won't go into all the detail now because it's technical, but we will go into it in the next few weeks or so. The halo of the glance, the effulgence of the glance, is Shambhu, Shiva. That's how Shiva manifests. Shiva's wife is Parvati, Durga, Kali. So she is the personality in charge of the material energy. Shiva's wife, she's in charge of that. Shiva's in charge of false ego, which is the first element, the binding element, which adds them all together. She's in charge of the whole thing. And she is the Lord Shakti, like that. So it is being described here that all the elements are there, everything has been created, but the demigods cannot put it together. So it describes here in the Bhagavatam, how does it all become manifest? The demigods pray to the Lord to please manifest the universe, and then the Lord has to enter the universe in order for it to become manifest. Otherwise, it's not possible. So therefore, as Mahavishnu, who has the original plans, he enters into each universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Mm. And then as Shiradakshaya Vishnu, he expands throughout the entire universe, like that, into each atom of the universe. And in this way, the creation can take place, only by the Lord himself entering. And also, in order for the demigods, all the elements are there, but in order for the universe to become manifest, it requires the Lord Shakti also to enter. So the Lord sends his time element, the Kala Shakti, and by the time element, everything begins to manifest within the universe. It is by the addition of the time element is said to be the 25th element of the creation. And the 26th is the Lord himself, the Paramatma, like that. So the 24th, the 25th and the 26th element, then all the others begin to manifest. That's how the creation takes place. So it has been described here that Durga is also somehow connected or somehow simultaneously the time element. Like that. That's the way it's been described at this point in time. So in other words, Kala Shakti, right, is the Lord's energy. She is the Shakti. So the time, somehow Durga is in control, and time is in control, and somehow Prabhupada is saying there, she is time, like that, the element is time. So it's not exactly clear, it hasn't been described exactly, but that just gives some understanding of it.
Prabhupada
said
that this energy is called Kali and is represented by the dark destructive body.
Yeah.
So she represents Kali.
Yeah, so she's blackish in that particular form. She has many forms. We see Uma, Parvati, Durga, like that, Kali, but she has many forms. Like that.
So normally the Kala Shakti is represented by a male person, and it's like the gods, it's like a Raja, and it's called the Kala Shakti. And normally what Ravana did was he tied up the Kali in his bedside cot, and he used to beat the Kala every time. He used to beat the Kala every time, not to trouble him. And even when Lord had to end up Mahabharata pastimes, the Kala appeared in Ramayana when Lord Rama wanted to finish off his pastimes. The Kala person, very dark, he came like a Brahmana, and he wanted to talk to Lord Rama. So he can remember that he has to leave the world the time that he went to his pastimes. And he came and he appeared as a Brahmana, and he told Lakshmana, who was there, he told the Lord that nobody must see us talking to each other. And then Lakshmana was also there, and the Lord told Lakshmana that, see, nobody must watch us, watch me and Kala together, so you have to go and stand in the door. And Lakshmana is in the door, and Kala is talking to the Lord about, he came into the soul of Kala and is talking to Lord Ram to wind up the question. And that time, by mistake, what happens? Something, Durvasamani or somebody comes. So Lakshmana gets scared, and then he enters into that place. So then Lord gets angry, and then he tells Lakshmana that, I am sacrificing you, you have to go. And Lakshmana goes somewhere and he assumes the form of the Ananta Sesha, and he goes back like that. And this Kala Shakti is talking to the why represented as the main person?
I'm not sure. It says here.
Maybe there are two forms. One is Kali and another one is Kala. Normally Kala is represented as somewhere like the main form.
Yeah, well, here it's been said that it's feminine. Mm. Kala Shakti is feminine.
They have two forms, one Kali and one Kali.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that ends with it.
But that Kali, that's what Lord says, no, time I am the great destroyer of the three worlds.
He says time I am, but it is his Shakti. It is not, it is an energy of the Lord. So, and usually the Shaktis, the energies are feminine, usually in potency. So here it's being described that it is feminine potency. Like that. But you're saying that in some pastimes it appears in male places, so I can't, I can't explain.
So, verse 28 describes Mahatattva as a plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead with full consciousness of creative principles and time for the fructification.
Can someone blow up the phone or something? It's distracting me. Just rip it out of the wall. Sorry, it's under the influence of a lot of ignorance. Can someone please stop the phone? It's noise. Thank you.
So, the verse 28 in chapter 5 describes Mahatattva as a plenary expansion of the personality of God with full consciousness of creative principles and time for the fructification. So, this transformation of Mahatattva with this consciousness in the time takes place at this stage of the verse.
Meaning,
right now the Lord is entered into the Pindati elements along with, you know, the Kala Shakti for allowing creation, for allowing the universe to manifest.
What's taking place here now in chapter 6 is it's talking about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Like that. So what's talking about now, previous to this, Mahavishnu has glanced at Pradhan. Pradhan has become stirred up, meaning the different elements of manifest and so forth. So basically that means that the universes have begun to manifest from his pores, like that. So when the universes manifest, then he's glancing. This is where it becomes a little confusing, because it says that he glances outside, but then it also says that he glances within in other places and the jivas and everything. So say, okay, we'll explain it like that. He glances within himself at the elements. The pradhana is within himself. We'll say it like that for explanation. It's within himself. Everything becomes stirred up, and then it becomes to manifest out of his pores, like that. All the different elements, like that. So that's chapter 5, all the elements coming out of his pores, like that. The universe is coming out and everything manifesting. In chapter 6, it describes the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu as entering into each universe. He then expands into each universe. So he's entering into each universe. So that's what's happening at this point. Like that. Does that make sense? Is that what you're...
I was trying to understand the nature of the Mahatattva. Is identified as the plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead. So obviously, after the first Purusha Avatar, the second plenary expansion is Sri Garbhodaksaya Vishnu. Isn't it? And it identifies Mahatattva as a plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead with full consciousness of creative principles and time for the fructification. Now that is in verse number 28 of chapter 5. So my question is, at this stage, when the Lord has entered all the 23 elements along with his Kala Shakti, this transformation of Mahatattva, so Sri Garbhodaksaya Vishnu is nothing but the transformation of the Mahatattva with Lord in it.
What it means, it says, when it says in verse 28 that the Mahatattva is conscious, is that how it says it? Yeah, just wait. How does it say that?
It says it is the plenary expansion of the person.
Okay, so what it means when it says it's a plenary expansion, the Lord glanced at the Pradhan, it became conscious, you could say. The 24 elements were there. The 25th element is the time factor, which came from his glance. The 26th element is the Paramatma. So how does it say it? It is
a plenary expansion of the personality.
So to say it's a plenary expansion means when the Paramatma enters, then it becomes alive by the Lord's presence. Prabhupada explains this in the purports in this section. The body is dead, but with the soul in it, there's consciousness. The pradhan is inert. But when the Lord enters, in terms of Paramatma, then life comes. Suddenly the whole thing manifests like that. It says here in this verse two things.
Kala Shakti entered, which is the 25th element, the Lord's energy, and the Lord himself entered. And then within each universe, you could say Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is the soul of the universe.
Yes.
The soul of the whole Mahatattva is Mahavishnu. The soul of the universe is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. The soul of every atom or every heart, every individual is Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Prabhu is so we can say as Kali has time, and she's also Durga, and she's also Yogamaya.
Mahamaya. In the spiritual world, she is Yogamaya. In the spiritual world, that's her original form. Just like Krishna's expansion in the material creation is Mahavishnu, are the Vishnus. Right? The Vishnus are Krishna's expansion in the material world. So when Krishna comes as Mahavishnu, Yogamaya, who is his internal potency, she manifests in the material world as Mahamaya, his external potency.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
No, wait, does that make sense?
Yes, sir. But so when you say like she's guarding the material world, material universe.
Mahamaya. Durga.
So she's Durga Mahamaya.
Durga is Mahamaya. Yeah. Durga Mahamaya, and then here Prabhupada is saying Kala Shakti is also Kali, but he's saying Kala Shakti, time element, is also Durga. Not that, so something is that, yeah. Not totally clear.
In the Vishnu it said that he entered along with Kala Shakti and Maya. Then he was Kali there, it says Maya and Kala Shakti both.
Maya is in certain places is described as the ingredients for the soul. It says actually Pradhan. When it says Maya, Maya.
After the Pradhan, he said Mahatattva comes from the Pradhan, and then it says, along with after all these, it entered the Kala Shakti and Maya entered together.
Yeah, so here Prabhupada's saying, Prabhupada's saying within the purport that somehow Kala Shakti and Durga or Kali are very, something connected. Whether they're exactly the same personality or the same Shakti or, but there's something connected. Either way they're connected, because Durga is maintaining the universe and the whole thing is being maintained by time also. Time stimulates everything. So it's not 100% clear to me what Prabhupada means in that.
Yeah, but in the translation of the verse itself doesn't say anything about the time factor. It says only about Goddess Kali. So I mean Prabhupada has put the time factor in it, but according to the translation there's nothing about time factor.
Not directly, but Prabhupada is saying it.
Kali.
So maybe in some of the commentaries of the Acharyas or it wasn't clear to me when in like reading Burujapur's commentary. It's not entirely, what Prabhupada says in that sentence is not entirely clear to me exactly what it means and how it works. But time factor enters, Durga enters. So yeah, same or different. Somehow Prabhupada says they connect all of the same, but either way, I'm not gonna stay up, thinking about it all night. I'll just go to that first.
So in Garbha Ocean, when Garbhada Krishna lies down, Lakshmi is there with him. So I think she is the...
Not in the Garbhada Ocean. Oh, yeah, in the Garbhada Ocean.
Yeah, so Lakshmi is there with him. So she must be the expansion of the internal potential.
Internal potency, yeah. And from her comes Durga. Durga is her expansion.
Okay.
Any other points? Okay. Thus, when the personality of Godhead entered into the elements by his energy, all the living entities were enlivened into different activities, just as one is engaged in his work after awakening from sleep. So Prabhupada points out in the first part of the purport that the jivas enter into each universe, and as they enter into each universe, then they're given an opportunity to become liberated from the material energy. And what is their opportunity to become liberated? powers are given to the living entities.
My Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, Prabhupada says from the Vedic literatures. Yeah. So they enter into the material universes, and then by hearing, right, the transcendental message of the Bhagavad Gita, of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of the Vedic literatures, then they get an opportunity to become liberated from the material world. And the Paramatma, who has entered into each universe, then he gives the living entities remembrance of their previous desires. Because each living entity is entering into the material universe after being dormant or unconscious within Mahavishnu for millions of years. Prabhupada explains in the second part of the purport that this dormant consciousness is unnatural for the soul. It's unnatural. Sleep is actually unnatural for the soul. It is actually Maya, not that. In the spiritual world, there is no sleep. There is no unconsciousness. And you'll see when Srila Prabhupada, when someone who is beyond the modes of material nature, when someone who is on the spiritual platform, the Brahma Buddha platform, when he comes into this world, he never loses consciousness. See, so when a great soul who is actually liberated, who is in spiritual consciousness, comes into this world, like Prabhupada as an example, Prabhupada would only sleep 2 hours a night. But it wasn't sleep like us. You know, when we sleep, we sleep. We are unconscious. You know, we don't know anything could be happening around us. We do not know. We don't know where we are, what we are. You know, everything's completely lost. You know, sometimes when you're traveling, you know, overseas or something, like you get on the plane, you go to Singapore, you know, on the way to India, and then you stop over, and then you're in the hotel room, and then you wake up in the middle of the night, and you look around, and you think, you know, where am I? Yeah. Indrajumna Swami says, because Indrajumna, you know, the sannyasis, they're always traveling. Indrajumna Swami says sometimes he wakes up and it takes him 3 or 4 minutes to work out which cities he's in, which country he's in. He's like, where am I? You know, am I in Russia? Am I in America? Am I in Poland? Am I in Hong Kong? He says sometimes he's just lazy and he's like, where am I? So, this sleeping state is not natural for the jivas in this material. It's not natural for the jivas. But when you come to the material world, you become covered. So then we identify with ignorance, we become covered by ignorance. But Srila Prabhupada, we saw, as one different pastimes, but one time he was in the train traveling between cities in India, and he's with his secretary, Shama Sundar. And Prabhupada took rest, around about 10 o'clock Prabhupada took rest, and 12 o'clock he would get up. So Prabhupada took rest, and Shama Sundar took rest. And just before they had taken rest, they were talking. Prabhupada was speaking about a specific subject about management within ISKCON. And then Prabhupada took rest. And then they'd been resting for about half an hour, and Shama Sundar had fallen asleep. And then he woke up, or, you know, the light was on. Prabhupada woke up and he sat up on the bed in the train. Prabhupada sat up, he turned the light on. He said, Shama Sundar, wake up. The Shama Sundar woke up and he was totally, you know, bewildered. And Prabhupada said, take dictation. And he was like, you know, totally, you know, when you wake up suddenly you're all, you know, in the mode of ignorance. And Prabhupada said, take dictation. So Prabhupada was alert, fully awake, and started speaking to him, and he had to start writing down everything which Prabhupada, because Prabhupada wasn't sleeping. You know, when Prabhupada appeared to be what we call asleep, Prabhupada was still very much conscious. Like that. Even Hari Sori Prabhu, in his diary, said sometimes he was massaging Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would drift off for about 10 minutes while he was massaging. Hari Sori Prabhu was massaging Prabhupada, Prabhupada would drift off. And then he said that sometimes Prabhupada would drift off, like in the middle of a sentence, you know, drift off. And then when Prabhupada would come back to consciousness, like 10 minutes later, he would start from that exact point which he left off when he was speaking. We don't do that. You know, if I fall asleep for 10 minutes, I'll wake up, like, you know, I don't remember, you know, what I was talking about or anything like that.
awake only, we can live.
Even when you're awake, you may not remember.
So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, you're Buddha Kesha. Buddha Kesha, one who has conquered sleep.
Conquered over sleep, yeah. So Prabhupada's pointing out that for the jivas to enter into the material creation, and then to go into Mahavishnu's body for all that time, millions of years, and to be unconscious, that is unnatural for them. And then when we come out and we go into sleep, like every night we sleep, that is unnatural. Because in the spiritual world there is no sleep. No one sleeps in the spiritual world. Even if they may appear to be taking rest, but it's fully Krishna, they're dreaming of Krishna. They're associating with Krishna. They never become unconscious. That's not the nature of the soul. Right, so this shows that we're covered by ignorance within the material world. So when you come into the material world, Prabhupada says in the purport, the Vedas are meant to awaken us back to our liberated state of consciousness, awakened consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Right? And the Paramatma, when we come back after being within Mahavishnu, we come back into the creation once again, the new creation. And then Paramatma reminds us of all of our previous desires from the previous creation, and then we begin our material bodies again. So it is described that there are millions of universes coming from the pores of Mahavishnu, and the universe we're in right now, our particular universe, is the one that we stay in for the entire duration of Lord Brahma's life. It's not when people leave their body, they go to different universes. You're just within this universe. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji. You're just travelling around in this particular universe. Right? 8,400,000 species of life. And you travel within this particular universe. And when you come out of the body of Mahavishnu, if your last life in the previous creation was a giraffe, as an example, and you go into Mahavishnu's body for millions of years, then when you come back out again, you take birth as giraffe. Right. Now, how does that happen? Paramatma. Paramatma organizes. Because he remembers everything. And he gives you all your desires back from exactly where you left off when you took rest. Just like in the morning, every day we wake up. Okay, devotees, you know, we're devotees, but say for the non-devotees, every morning they wake up, how do they remember? Every morning, what their desires are. How do they remember? Paramatma. Right? Gives all the desires back. They wake up in the morning.
Because it says when the living entities, jivas, merge into Mahavishnu, they merge with their material conditioning, so we carry like a luggage.
It's all there, but as Krishna says in the Gita, mata smritiya jnanam bhavacha. The remembrance comes from Paramatma.
He helps us to retrieve it.
Yeah, he does it.
Unpack.
Yeah, he's the one who does it. He's the one who gives us the desires back, like that, the remembrance, like that. So, when we come into the material world, we forget Krishna, like that, but Paramatma allows us to remember him and tries to give us indications to come back to him. And when the jiva is ready to begin to come back to him, then he comes in contact with the Vedas, and the Vedas liberate one into the spiritual world once again, into awakened consciousness.
But that's only for the human beings, right?
The Vedas.
So the Vedas, who have intelligence to understand what the Vedas. But what about all the rest of the species of beings like? They've also been in the dormant state. And
the Bhagavad Gita says, Trayate Mahato Bhaya. This is the greatest fear. The greatest fear is to take birth in the lower species because you lose the opportunity. It's just ignorance, it's just mode of ignorance. Ignorance and passion, that's all it is.
So I mean, like, suppose, like for the example, the same example you took as a giraffe taking born again as a giraffe. What about the desires or why should it be a giraffe again? So which means...
Because that's the desires. The living entity wants to enjoy separately from Krishna. Mm-hmm. Then all the karma comes back.
Because animals had automatic promotion because they're not bound by karma and jnana, right?
Yeah.
So which means a giraffe necessarily need not be a giraffe the next birth.
He has to be. No, yeah, at the time, okay, so what? Okay, so giraffe and then next, whatever it is. But the point is you come back in the same
desires.
Same desires, or the same point that you left. of that. That's how the Lord organizes the entire thing according to your desires.
Excuse me, Prabhupada, in 3.6, I think, in Gita it says the active, always the soul will be active. Then when it merges, then it becomes unconscious. For millions of years it will be dormant like that, it's in the body of Mahavishnu. Then how to think that the soul is active? It's like unconsciously inside.
Because sleep is an activity. Sleep is an activity.
Same sleep, how we sleep like that. Sleep means it's the same as like how we sleep in the night, like that only, or
the similar, similarly, unconscious.
Unconscious.
It's something. What it means is the soul does not cease to exist.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have an opportunity to be active like that. But still, when someone's sleeping, you don't say they're.
Mind,
or maybe deep sleep. Deep sleep means that even the mind is not operating. But still, it's not that the. They do not cease to exist at that point in time. Like that. Do you have a point?
I had a point once when I was sleeping. I had really realization that one part of me is always conscious, all time sleeping. It was like, it happened, I was sleeping and I was dreaming there was an earthquake. And I was dreaming because there was an earthquake in the house, it break from this angle to this angle. And when I got up, I forgot about the dream, but then on the radio I listened, there was an earthquake. And I straight away looked at the roof and I straight away saw this. And I was sleeping and in a dream I had this. I was thinking, oh, it means some part of me is always conscious and he detects everything what's happening. And also happened a few funny things which happened, it's a long story. But I came to conclusion that one part of us is always conscious, although we are sleeping.
Yeah, so that's astral traveling. It means the subtle body goes outside of the gross body sometimes when one is sleeping. So that's called astral traveling, like that. So it's that subtle body which is perceiving what's happening through the subtle body. The Bhagavad Gita describes there are three states of consciousness. There is waking consciousness, dreaming consciousness, which is like a light sleep. That's when we're having dreams, we're in a light sleep. Usually you dream just when you go to sleep and just when you're waking up, usually. But you don't usually dream in the middle of the night so much like that. And then there's deep sleep, which is almost like total shut off like that, basically. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Just a question.
Yeah.
When a person desires to merge into Brahman, he is also in the inactive, his soul is in the inactive state. So what is the difference between that inactive state and when the person is within the Mahavishnu, that inactive state?
It's similar, but it is said that when one goes into Brahman, the Acharya is sometimes described as being like sleep. Like sleep. It's a similar thing. But there is some conscious awareness. It's like a state of I am conscious, or I am consciousness. So maybe one is almost like losing consciousness, and the other one is just I am consciousness, but nothing.
But there's no activity.
No activity, no. It's just like awareness, that's all it is. It's a little bit hard to describe, but it's just like awareness. Like I am conscious, you know, I exist. It's like acknowledgement of existence, you know, it's because it's described, it's the realization of sat or eternality. So it's a realization that I am existing, I am conscious, I am everything. Like that.
Does the soul in the Brahman state has got mind intelligence?
Not, yeah, these things are not, you transcend the subtle body at that point. You transcend the subtle body. You give up the gross and subtle bodies, and you go into there, but it is just consciousness which is existing, and you identify with just consciousness. I am consciousness, but that's not actually who we are. We're not just consciousness. We are Krishna's servant, like that. But that's not identifying. So, does that make sense? It's a little bit hard to describe like that. So, what I said, I think, gives a little bit of understanding to it. But it's So it gives you some, but it's very hard to describe it because it's both of them are quite similar.
Can you not have questions?
You're going to have to be quick
because
I have to.
No, I'm just saying, can you not have questions on this? Otherwise, in our exams?
Sorry.
Can you not have any questions on our exams about all this technical
stuff? About creation?
Yeah.
Most of the exam is going to be about creation.
Then you'll have very much, probably, like about, if we have 20, you'll have 25 versions of it.
That means the course is not operating very well.
It's just, I mean, each, you may say a thing, but each of us kind of visualize something different.
That's okay, as long as the gist is there. As long as the gist. I mean, it should be quite clear, the basic gist of it. Mm. Not that it all becomes speculative. You know, we should be understanding the Bhagavatam's version like that. But, you know, obviously, like you say, you know, everyone's going to have. I mean, yeah, I'm reading this and a lot of it's like, wow, you know, it's hard to perceive.
It's very, yeah.
But we should have an idea of it, at least. The Bhagavatam is clear. Bhagavatam is giving description. We should have an understanding of Mahavishnu, Gavadakshaya Vishnu, yeah. Shudakshaya Vishnu, how the elements manifest. All those things should be understood. Mm-hmm. But to visualize how the whole thing works is beyond us.
Well, what's the reason for the reason behind
Yoga Nidra is the Lord's slumber. Mm. That's where Mahavishnu is sleeping. Yoga Nidra, yoga means mystic slumber, like that, and Nidra means slumber or sleep. So when the Lord, it's not like we gave the example of Prabhupada, when Mahavishnu is lying down, it appears like he's sleeping on the ocean, and his universes are coming from his pores. But at that time, it's not that he's actually asleep. He's actually dreaming, but what he's dreaming of is having pastimes with his devotees. Like that. So that's what's taking place. That's why it's called Yoga Nidra. Does that make sense? I'll go into that a little bit more. I'm going to have to keep going because this is too much.
One quick question.
So, Bhagavatam Vishnu sleeps for 4 months, the winter, Chaturmas,
Gavadakshaya Vishnu.
Yeah, demigods. One quick one. Chaitan Prabhu said about the Brahmajyoti merging into Brahmajyoti. I thought when your subtle body is there in the spiritual world, but it is purified.
No,
mind, intelligence, and then false ego becomes ego.
Yeah, of soul. The soul also has mind, the soul also has intelligence, and the soul also has identity.
Mm.
Like that. But it's the soul's mind, it's the soul's intelligence. It's nothing to do with the subtle covering. The mind we have here is like a reflection of the mind we have in the spiritual world. Or the fact that Krishna has a mind. Krishna has mind, Krishna has intelligence, Krishna has identity, like that. So it's because he has those things and we have those things in a pure form, that's why it's there. Okay, so I can't take any more questions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have questions, save them for the next class because we have to finish up to this. Okay, text 4. When the 23 principal elements were set in action by the will of the Supreme, the gigantic universal form or the Vishwarupa body of the Lord came into existence. So, the Lord creates the universes. The universes have begun to manifest from Mahavishnu's body. And Gavadakshaya Vishnu, he enters into each universe as the soul of the universe. And then, in order for the universe to become manifest or created, then he, Gavadakshaya Vishnu, expands himself as Virat Rupa and as Paramatma. These two forms, they are coming from Gavadakshaya Vishnu. So, Virat Rupa is the universal form. And the Virat Rupa is the 14 planetary systems.
Mm-hmm.
This will be described in the next few chapters, like that. This is the form of Virat Rupa, like that. And it will describe in the next few chapters how all the different parts of the universe are part of that universal form. And that is how the Lord manifests, because nothing is happening. So he has to enter as Virat Rupa. And then the demigods, he gives them darshan of Virat Rupa. Right? He gives them awareness or consciousness of Virat Rupa, the universal form. And then Lord Brahma and the demigods, who are his chief assistants, they can look at the Virat Rupa and then they can understand, okay, this is how everything should be created. And then they begin to create and they understand where their position and their function is. For example, the eyes of the Lord are the... Sorry, the eyes of the Virat Rupa are the...
Sun.
Sun and moon. Okay, so sun, primarily. So then Surya understands, okay, now I should go there. This is where I should go. This is my function. This is where I should operate from. And this is how I should give vision to the... And he becomes the presiding deity of the eyes. Right? He's the demigod who gives the potency so that we can see with these material eyes. It is by his shakti, like that. He's empowered by the Lord. So this is how the Virat Rupa begins to manifest. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, the Virat Rupa is temporary. Right? It's not always there. It's a temporary form of the Lord. Because when the universe is not manifest, there's no such thing as Virat Rupa. Similarly with Paramatma, Paramatma is also not eternal. Paramatma is only manifest when the material world is manifest. When the universes go back into Mahavishnu, Paramatma enters back into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters back into Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is eternal, but the others are not eternal. But Virat Rupa is a transcendental form of the Lord, Prabhupada explains, just like the Archivigraha or the deity in the temple. The deity in the temple may appear to be made of matter, from our vision to some degree, but the Lord has entered that form and therefore it has transcendental potency. So the Virat Rupa has transcendental potency because the Lord has entered that form. But it is made of material elements like that. Prabhupada is the same as the deity like that. That's how we understand it. Okay. That's quite clear, I think. As the Lord in his plenary portion entered into the elements of the universal creation, they transformed into the gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creations rest. The gigantic Virat Purush, known as Hiranmaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all the living entities lay with him. So he enters within each universe. So what takes place is that the universes come from the pores of Mahavishnu, and he expands into each universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. The Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters each universe, and each Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters into each universe, and each universe is the shape of an egg. Right? It's not the shape of a ball. It's not round. It's like an egg, oval shape. Each universe. And he lies down in each universe, right? And because the universe is very compact, because he's so large, he's so great, he lies down within the universe, and because it's quite hot within the universe, he begins to perspire, and that perspiration fills up half of the universe, and that is the Garbhadaka ocean. So within this universe, every universe, Half the universe is filled up with spiritual water. Of course, when the scientists look with a telescope, they will not see the water because it is spiritual water. It comes from the Lord's body. It is perspiration from the Lord's body. So it fills up half, and then he lies down on Ananta Shesh. Also, they cannot see it because they do not have the eyes to see it. But if you had the spiritual eyes, you could see these things. Lies down on Ananta Shesh, and he lies down on that... Garbhadaka ocean, and says he lies there for 1,000 celestial years until, Prabhupada says, until Lord Brahma comes from his navel, like that, the lotus flower comes from his navel, and Lord Brahma manifests like that. So he lies there for 1,000 and the perspiration comes from his body. So that's what takes place. We'll go into more details in the next few weeks. The total energy of the Mahatattva is in the form of the gigantic Virat Rupa, divided himself by himself into the consciousness of the living entities, a life of activity, the self and self-identification, which are divided into 1, 10, and 3, respectively. In the form of the gigantic Virat Rupa. Yeah, so what it means at this point in time, Mahatattva means the universe. I mean, now it's talking about, see, we've gone now from, in the previous chapter, it was talking about Mahavishnu glancing at Pradhan. Now we've come into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's part of the creation. It's the next stage. So at this point in time, chapter 6 is talking about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So the Mahatattva now means just that one little universe, not the total energy. That one little universe. So that one little universe, the Mahatattva means the 24 elements. 24 elements, that is Mahatattva. Right? So each universe is now made up of those 24 elements, the Mahatattva. And the Lord enters as the universal form. And the universal form is made up of those 24 elements. So in that way it is the same thing. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah, it makes sense. Okay. Okay, so now it is described that the Lord, He has entered the universe. Mahavishnu has injected the jivas into the pradhan. Right? So now universes are coming from the pores of Mahavishnu, and Mahavishnu has entered each universe's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and he's glanced, by his glance, all the jivas are impregnated into each universe. So they enter at this point into the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So this is the 1,000 celestial years before Brahma appears. Where are all the jivas? They're in the universe, they've been glanced. They're inside Garbhadakshaya Vishnu at this point in time. So now he wants them to manifest. He wants them all to come out. So in order for them all to come out and for them to begin to live in the universe, then he gives them different types of coverings. Covers their body or gives them different facilities.
Coverings
which make up those forms, like that. So it is described here, the Bhagavatam technically describes 1, 10, and 3 respectively. Right? So the 10 is the 10 life airs. Like that. The body is, if you study Ayurveda, it is very much about the life airs. When someone is not well, when they become sick, according to Ayurveda, it's very much dealing with the life airs. It means the airs are not functioning properly.
Mm.
And Prabhupada, if you read in the verse 9 in the second paragraph, Prabhupada describes what the 10 life airs do. And if any of them are out of order, then you'll see people, their health becomes problematic. Because generally, in Ayurveda, they'll treat the airs like that. They'll do adjustments to make the airs, they'll give you oil massage to make the airs come into it like that. So these 10 airs are given by the Lord in order for us to develop our bodies, to fulfill our desires. And then the 3, Prabhupada says within the purport, the 3, Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, this consciousness is divided into 3 modes of self-identification according to the proportion of purity. So self-identification, 3 types of self-identification. Adiyatmik, self-identification of the body and mind. Adibhautik, self-identification of material products. Anadi Devi, or self-identification as the servant of the Lord. So that's slightly different to the way we usually define the three of them. This means some living entities, the Lord gives them their body. They're all within the Lord in Gavadakshaya Vishnu. He wants them to manifest their particular forms in 8,400,000 species of life. So every one of the 8,400,000 species of life, he gives them 10 life heirs, right, to most of the forms of that. And then he gives them three types of self-identification. Means like three types of like levels of consciousness. So the first one is the Adi Yatmik, which means they identify, or the first one you could say is the Adi Bhautik. They identify with the body. That's all they think they are, the body. So you'll see like the trees, you know, the trees don't think they're the mind even, they just think they're the body, that's all. And the animals, like a tiger, he just thinks he's the body. All he knows is that I am a tiger, I am hungry. That's basically all he knows. That's his whole life, it's basically like that. Then higher than that is Adi Atmik, which means you think you are the mind, as Prabhupada says here, and the, well, Prabhupada says the body and the mind, like that. So it means that's slightly higher consciousness. And most humans are like that. You know, they think they're the mind. That's basically how they operate all day. I am the mind. You know, I like this, I like that. I don't like this, I don't like that. It's basically what people do all day long. So that's a slightly higher level of consciousness. But higher than that is Adi Daivik. And that means the person, his main consciousness, is about developing spiritual realization or self-realization. So that's the Lord gives at the beginning of the creation, because in the beginning of the creation, the 8,400,000 species of life, they're all on those different levels of consciousness. So the Lord gives that in the beginning. He gives the 10 life heirs for their form, and he gives their different states of consciousness, or self-identification. And then the one element which has been discussed here is consciousness itself. Right? Consciousness means an identity in this world. You come out in this world and you have a consciousness and identity. You know, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a human being, right? I am an elephant, I am a, you know, anything, a tree. That's like a sense of consciousness, all like that. So the Lord gives all these things in the beginning, like that. Don't worry about this too much on your exam. This is a detail, but don't get right into it like, oh, I'll tell you like that. It's a detail, it's there, it's nice, but don't worry, I'm not going to focus on it. I'll give you that much advice, because I don't want you to all, I want you to concentrate on the more important things. These are just details, but they're technicalities in the creation, because the creation is technical. The gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord is in the first incarnation and plenary portion is the first incarnation and plenary portion of the super soul. He is the self of an unlimited number of living entities, and in him rests the aggregate creation which thus flourishes. The gigantic universal form is represented by 3, 10, and 1 in the sense that he is the body and mind and the senses. He is the dynamic force for all movements by 10 kinds of life energy, and he is the one heart where life energy is generated. The Supreme Lord is the supersoul of all the demigods, entrusted with the task of constructing the cosmic manifestation. Being thus prayed to by the demigods, he thought to himself and thus manifested the gigantic form for their understanding. So the Lord manifests this huge, gigantic, universal form so that the demigods have the understanding of how the universe should be created. And Prabhupada points out the purport that all this comes from Gavadakshaya Vishnu. Right, this beginning of chapter 10, chapter 5 is speaking about Mahavishnu. Chapter 6, which we've entered now, is speaking about, at this point, is speaking about Gavadakshaya Vishnu. Now, if you speak to a non-devotee, and just like, you know, we hear about, if you speak to most materialistic people, they'll explain the creation in terms of Darwin's theory of evolution. That's basically very much the accepted theory or the accepted explanation of creation, right, at this point in time on in the world, very much it's dominant. But it's a materialistic concept. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, it's only dealing with the elements. But where did the elements come from?
They say from the Big Bang.
They'll say from the Big Bang. Yeah, they'll say from the Big Bang. Or the primordial soup. Right? But Prabhupada, because they gave that argument to Prabhupada, so Prabhupada said Big Bang means that there was matter which exploded. Prabhupada said, so where did the matter come from? That's Prabhupada, he was arguing like that. So you can't say Big Bang, because it doesn't go back to the origin. So then, what is the Bhagavatam's explanation of creation? Right? The creation of this universe comes from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who comes from Mahavishnu, right? Who is a four-armed, bluish personality, right? Who holds a lotus, a club, a disc and a conch, who is laying on a thousand-headed serpent, right? On a ocean at the bottom of... For a materialist. It's like, you know, they say to us, you know, they're trying to tell us about Darwin's theory, and we're saying that's ridiculous. Right? And we say, actually, the way it happened is like this, and they say, well, you know, this is also very amazing.
We don't have to explain to them all this. You can just say, is a person an intelligent, very intelligent person who created this?
Yeah, that's true. We can say like that. But I'm just saying, in terms of the way the Bhagavatam describes it, this is actually how the Bhagavatam describes it. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, what is the element that is necessary for a person to accept this explanation?
Faith.
Faith, yeah.
Prasad.
You don't think about much else. So then, both those answers are correct. Well, Prabhupada says it is.
Submissive.
Yeah, you can say submissive here. Well, ultimately, Prabhupada says it is bhakti. Bhakti. By devotion. If someone has bhakti, I mean, all these answers are correct. But bhakti, if someone has bhakti, then one can perceive or can accept that there is this divine personality who is beyond the material senses perception. He exists, and it's from him that the creation takes place. The Virat Rupa comes from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who comes from Mahavishnu, who comes from Krishna. Like that. But this divine personality cannot be understood unless someone has devotion. If someone is just under the influence of Maya, the external energy, then he will think it is the external energy which is the cause. Mm. Right? And therefore they say, like, Big Bang theory. They say that, you know, it's the external energy, because that's all I can perceive, that's all I believe in. That caused it. But it's not a logical explanation, because it doesn't go back to a... So you have to have faith, you have to have bhakti, and then you'll understand. So that's it for tonight. I know it was technical. I hope it was understandable to some degree. We'll try to make it more understandable as the classes go by. It is technical, but this is the most technical part of the moment, I'm sorry. The homework will be, on Saturday night, will be verses, say, 11 to 20, around, we'll do about 10 verses. If anyone wants these books, hands up if you'd like to take one of these books with you tonight. Hands up. Hands up high if you want one of these books tonight. 1, 2, 3, okay, 6, 7, 8, 9.
And we're just running at $40 each.
Oh, he's got the price. Right. Okay, so they're $40. So if you have the money, you can pay for them now. If you don't have the money but you want the book, then you can take it, but you have to give me the money on Saturday night. $40. Like that. And if you're taking the money but not paying for it tonight, I want you, just give your name to Chetan and he'll write down your name so that you don't leave town with the book. Otherwise, the temple president will chastise me. Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.